Oh yeah, meeting is now streaming live on YouTube. Sick.
I guess we're live. Nick Shaw in the building. Episode one. What's up, buddy?
What is going on, man? It's great to be here, man. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's been a minute, man. We've been gone. For those of you who don't know who Nick Shaw is, he has been all over my YouTube channel, Yugo Pro Official. 1 million views, over 1 million views.
Bring that back, baby. Yes.
Looking good. Offers all kinds of instructional stuff and is the creator of the Baseball Box, monthly subscription box with all types of baseball goodies shipped to your doorstep every month. Or I always say every month, but they can order it one at a time or just as a single gift, right?
So, yep, they can do that too, yep.
That's cool. And, I mean, I don't know if we can let anything out of the bag just yet, but you might have something cool coming up maybe next month or the month after, some prizes going in there.
Oh yeah. Possibly.
I don't know how much you can say.
There's gonna be a nice giveaway with a few items. Yeah, it's gonna be nice. It's gonna be nice.
Well, that's cool. I really have no plan. Like I told you when we hopped on here, I have no plan. I figure instead of doing just like a typical, because everyone's hopping on these lives and doing interviews and trying to do podcasts and all this stuff. But I would rather just kind of have a conversation with you and give the audience a chance to kind of look in and kind of, you know, just listen in. And if I can figure out a way to take comments, I would do that as well. But I don't know how to do that yet. Again, this is the first time. So really got nothing planned. But if you want to start, could we talk about your journey, our journeys, going into pro baseball? Like I remember you talking about in high school, when you first came into high school, you were a smaller player and you really had to work hard to get into pro ball. Just take us through your journey. Tell us a little bit about Nick Shaw and how he made it to pro baseball and was a stud middle infielder for the Brewers organization.
All right. So it was no easy journey, as I've told you, and I've told this story, man, so many times. It wasn't this cookie cutter, like I was always the best player. By no means was I ever the best player on my team, you know, never mind in the league. I was an all-star most of the time coming up, you know, in youth baseball and whatever in high school. But by no means was I the best player or even the second best player on my team. You know, I came into high school, like I told you, man, I was 5'3", 115 pounds. You know, and I expected to go in there and hopefully play. You know, I wasn't the most confident kid at that size just because I was smaller and I never really dominated, like I said. But I always had to work hard. Being that small guy, I always had to work hard. So that's what continued to drive me through the levels, is that work ethic I had to have to even keep playing in high school. If I didn't have work ethic, man, at 5'3", 115 pounds, I would have been on the bench. Then I would have been off the team pretty darn quick. So as I worked hard, earned my spot, I actually ended up starting my freshman year at second base, which I was a shortstop, but I found a way to make it work over there. You know, worked on things at home and learned some stuff about second base at home and made it work over there. And the one thing that I could have done easily is blame my high school coach. I could have said, he doesn't know anything, whatever, because he was the football coach. He legitimately didn't know much about baseball. And I hear that tons. Oh, my coach did this. My coach did that. Nowadays, I feel like that's not an excuse you can even use, you know, with all these resources, especially yourself putting out stuff like you do. It's easy to learn there. But, you know, I found a way back then to work hard and learn what I could about second base to make it work. By my senior year, I was able to get good enough and strong enough to play the shortstop position pretty darn good. But even then, I had a great senior season, but I was still only 5'7". I was still only 134 pounds. Who's looking at that guy? No pro organization's looking at that guy, that's for sure. You know, and no Division I. I know everyone loves Division I, which I wish I could have gone to as well, you know, but no Division I. Program was looking at that guy, you know, unless I was dropping bombs, which I wasn't, you know. So my buddy, my teammate, he was the catcher on my high school team my senior year, gets drafted by the Twins in like the 20th round or something, and he decides not to go, which is the blessing that my career path, you know, lucked up and crossed. So my high school coach sets up a workout with the head coach for Barry University down in Miami. I had never heard of him, but I'm like, okay. And my high school coach is like, hey, you know, the head coach wanted to come and work out the catcher, but my high school coach is like, hey, check this guy out too. So I was kind of the throw-in, you know, to the guy that was drafted, which is totally fine. I went out there and I just did my normal stuff, which my hands were very good. I always worked on my hands. And our high school field was terrible. But at the end of the workout, the coach for Barry's like, dude, and he paused a little bit. He's like, you just took ground balls on the worst high school field I've ever seen in my entire life, and you made it look like Fenway Park. He's like, how do I not sign you after that? I said, I don't know, man, but I'm ready to go. So I signed there. I don't think I got any baseball money, but, man, I was just happy to go somewhere because that was my senior summer, nowhere to go. You know, I could have gone to FCCJ, I think, but that was about it.
Let me stop you there real quick because what was going through your head, like – because that would have been it, right? If that doesn't happen, like what did you have on the back burner? Like what was going through your head? Like, did you have other plans or what was your thought process? Or were you like, I'm figuring this out no matter what? There was no plan B.
There was no plan B. Like growing up, I had baseball. You know, that was it. So life without it, I didn't even think to plan for it because I just assumed, well, I'm just going to play baseball. You know, not knowing that, which it hit me my senior year, a little pressure built up. That could have been it. And then I would have been going to college, taking regular classes, and then going and joining the real world at whatever age that was, 21 or whatever, out of college, you know? I didn't have any other plan. I really didn't. I'm sure had I not gotten the connection with Barry, I probably would have tried to go the FCCJ route, gone through community college, played there, and hoped it went on from there. But, man, it wasn't looking promising, that's for sure.
You know, it was funny. I was in the same situation. I was a senior sign, and it wasn't until the summer of my senior year where I got offered a scholarship. Funny story was I pitched in the All-Star game, in the high school All-Star game, and the coach from the junior college really liked what he saw, and he said, hey, I'm having a tryout next weekend. Why don't you come? And I was like, all right, yeah, cool, I'll be there. And I didn't show up. And so after the tryout, whatever, he calls me and he goes, hey, how come you weren't here at the tryout? I was like, oh, you know, I had to do something. I don't know. I made something up. I just didn't go. I was being an idiot. I was being a high school kid. You know, my parents didn't have much say in what I was doing baseball wise. They weren't baseball people. Now, of course, they wanted me to go to college if I could, but they weren't super involved in that aspect of it. And you know, when I didn't go to the showcase, it wasn't a, you know, they probably didn't even know about it, to be honest. But he called me, how come you didn't come? And I was like, oh, I had, you know, something else to do, whatever. He's like, I really like what you're doing, you know, what you did when I saw you pitching in the game. I'd love to offer you a scholarship here. And I was like, oh, man, that's cool. Thanks. And he was like, so what do you say? And I didn't know what to say. So I was like, yeah, well, let me get back to you because I got a few other schools I'm looking at, and I'll let you know. And he was like, huh? Like, I just offered you a full scholarship and in the middle of the summer, your senior year, and, you know, you're not going to accept. So I told him, I'll get back to you. I hang up and I go, Mom, I think I got a full scholarship to play baseball in college. And she was like, you better call him back right now and tell him you're going. Because I didn't really have anywhere else to go. I was lying to the guy. So anyway, I called him back and got a full scholarship. And then
senior summer, man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. Not know that. It was crazy. So what? So take me through. So after you get into Barry, then how did it go from there?
Yeah, so I went to Barry again. Hadn't grown much, man. So I was scratching and clawing to try to just make the team. You know, I had a spot. I signed and had a spot, but man, I wanted to secure an actual spot during that fall. You know, so I was busting my butt like I normally did. To be completely honest, and I'm not just saying that because I want kids to do it themselves, but I had to work hard, man, and I did. So that fall I was busting it, and they had a junior college transfer coming in from Manatee Community College. So he was going to be a junior that year. I was a freshman. He was going to be the starting shortstop. Pretty darn good player, you know, and I tried to compete neck and neck with him throughout the fall, and, you know, he had more juice than me. He had a little better arm than me. I fielded better than him, but above, you know, all things compared, he was a better player. So sure enough, we start the year that spring. He's a starting shortstop. I'm on the bench. First time I'd ever sat the bench. So it was very weird. Like that first game, I'm like, man, I have to do this for 2 years. This is going to be rough. But you know, I didn't really hang my head. I still went to practice. I still stayed locked in, you know, just in case. I didn't really know what was coming up next. Sure enough, second game of the year at Nova Southeastern, he dives up the middle to make a play, dislocates his shoulder. Next thing I know, they're carting him off the field. My head coach goes, Shaw, you're in the game. My freshman season, second game of the year. I'm like, me? In the game? What do you mean? So sure enough, I grab a ball and I'm like throwing. Man, I am shaking like a leaf. Like, what? And I'm about to get in there. College game, my freshman year, second game. And never looked back from there, man. You know, that whole game, obviously, I was jittery as can be. I blacked out. I have no idea what happened the entire game. Couldn't tell you. you know, grinded through that freshman year. I only hit like 280-something. Wasn't my best offensive year. But I ended up winning a gold glove for the conference. So that defensive aspect of my game continued to push me through, you know. And it came to a point where that kid got healthy the next year. He is coming back as a senior and I'm a sophomore. And I ended up beating him out for shortstop. And he played second base the next season. And then that boosted my confidence so big, man. When I beat him out for that spot, ended up having my best year ever at Barry. That was 2008, I believe, my sophomore season. And hit 400 and was an All-American. And it was a great season for me, man. But just that, finally got some gratification, like, yes, all that hard work paid off. Like, I beat out a legit dude for shortstop. You know, this is it. And then from there, it went junior season, played with some really great guys. Yan Gomes, World Series winner, catcher. Danny Lima, who got drafted by the Rangers. A few other guys that had gotten drafted. Had our best year there. We were ranked one in the nation for a few weeks there. And it was a great ride that season. And then finally, that senior season came, and I'm like, this is going to be huge, you know? And little do I know, my fall season, I take a swing, bam, have sciatic pain run down my right leg. And I go to run to first. I can't move. I can't walk. I can't do anything. Hit the ground. And this is supposed to be like, I'm going to get drafted this, you know, my senior year, because junior year didn't happen. So I'm like, this is it. You know, this is my year to get drafted. In the fall, getting ready, I felt strong, everything. Took a swing, bam, sciatic pain. I go to a bunch of doctors. They're like, oh, we can do cortisone, da-da-da-da-da, we'll do surgery, all this stuff. So finally, we're like, we're going to go to the best. We're going to go to the best doctor. So we went here to Tampa Bay Laser Spine Institute. Like, they're supposed to be, like, top-notch, and they're going to nail it, you know? I'm like, okay, this is great. So I drive home. We go there. And I walk into this appointment, and I'm like, here's some good news. And the doctor's like, so what's going on? He's reading the sheet. And I'm like, every time I swing or turn this way, sciatic pain to the point where I can't even move. Like, I can't walk. I can't do anything. He's like, oh, well, can you just hit right-handed? I'm like, what? Wait a second. I went through all these doctors. I drove all this way, and you're just going to tell me to hit right-handed my senior year of college? I'm like, no, I can't just hit right-handed. Like, I'm a left-handed hitter. And he was, like, so confused, like, huh. Well, in that case, we could just give you some cortisone.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
Bro, I'm like, what? And I literally said that. What? No. And my mom was in the room too, just as dumbfounded. Like, no, he's a left-handed hitter. But, oh, my God. So ended up getting the cortisone there. Like, had to get the heck out of there. So got the cortisone, got out of there. And sure enough, man, within 3 days of the cortisone shots, man, I was 100%.
Yeah.
And I go. I only had to get one more round of cortisone shots that senior season, and the pain just went away.
Wow.
I have no idea why, but it pushed me through. And then senior year, I had a really good spring and was lucky enough to get picked up, man. That's awesome. It was not a smooth ride all the way up.
It never is, I don't think, you know, unless you're you know, just a natural born superstar. But there's not many of those type of players out there. But, you know, some people would say that you were lucky your freshman year. But I think a good way, I heard a quote once that's, luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you were prepared, and the opportunity presented itself when the shortstop got hurt. And I guess you could say you got lucky, but really, yeah. prepared to capitalize on the situation. That's cool. That's so cool, man. That's a funny story.
My double A manager, every time we'd say, "Oh, I got lucky," he would drill that statement into our head. That's not luck. He would get pissed. That's not luck. That's when preparation meets opportunity. You were prepared. I prepared you. Okay. Sorry.
All you, Skip. All you.
Yeah.
So, speaking of that, who, you got any funny stories of in pro ball or any managers that were like a little funny or crazy?
Oh, my gosh. So, Joe Arolt. He was the manager in Brevard County, the Manatees. It was high A. So it was my third year in pro ball. And I was still like trying to be like that guy that just stayed conformed, staying in the line, you know, not being recognized, just blending in. That's what I wanted to be. I didn't want to be the big shot, you know what I'm saying, or step out of line. So I go into that clubhouse, man, and we sweep the first series of the year, right? So I'm like, oh, yeah, we're excited a little bit. Didn't want to get too crazy because it's a new team. He comes in there, man, and there's a Gatorade cooler sitting on the table in the locker room in the clubhouse. He comes in there with a Fungo, and it's like he busts through the door, whips the Fungo out, smashes the water cooler. This thing explodes everywhere. There's water shooting all over the clubhouse, and he's got two bottles of baby powder, pops the lids off, and he's shaking it around. He goes, sweepy deepy, and just destroying the entire clubhouse. I'm there like this, like, what on earth is going on here? But sure enough, every time we swept somebody, it was an absolute show. And we all got in our seats. We're like, yeah, here he comes. And he blasts in, man, just destroying things.
That was one of my that's a funny story. That's one of my favorite memories from pro ball is after a win or after like a sweep like that, when you come in the clubhouse and it's literally like a party. Like, yeah. The music is blasting. Everyone's happy. You know, it's just – it's amazing, man. And, you know, it's a little different than – I don't remember it being like that in, like, college.
No, it wasn't for us. It wasn't for us at all. But you're exactly right in pro ball, man. When you got that big win or the sweep, man, lots of time it might have been Latin music that was blaring.
Most of the time.
Like, yeah, you know. I was still pumped up. I was still pumped up.
So was High A your first season or your second season?
That was my second full season. I went low A for a season, high A for a season.
So you went straight to low? Did you do any short season?
Yeah, I did AZL, the AZL, rookie ball. So short season in 2010. And then 2011 was low A.
How was Instructs?
Oh my gosh, Instructs, bro. I had a great year in the AZL because for me, I was like 21 years old coming out of college senior, and I'm facing these young prospects that are like 17, 18. You know what's coming. If they throw a strike, it's right down the middle. And it was very easy to hit there. So I had a great year. I ended up getting moved up to the short season advanced in Helena, Montana for the playoffs, whatever. I'm like, man, great first professional season. Last day of the season, head coach, which was Joe Arolt at the time, he's like, hey, man, congrats. I'm like, what are you talking about? You get to go to Instructs. I'm like, oh. You know, I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, you say that now. I'm like, oh, what? Wait a second. He's like, congrats. So he's like, yeah, you'll have fun there, man. I know what you're going to be working on. I'm like, what am I working on? He's like, you'll find out when you get there. I'm like, great. So I go to Instructs, you know, which was like, I think it was 4 weeks or so, 5 weeks long out in Asia. Yeah. After a season, you know, after a college season that year, you know, it was a long season. I get out there and one of the guys is like, yeah, come on in the office. We'll talk to you about what you're doing here. I'm like, okay. So I go in there. They're like, hey, you won't be needing that glove. I'm like, what? You won't be needing my glove? What are you talking about? We're playing baseball. I'm like, yeah. You won't be needing that glove though. All you're going to do is you're going to hit 10th. You're going to bunt every single time you come to the plate. And every time a slow guy gets on base, we're going to pinch run for it and you're going to steal. I'm like, what? For the whole time? Yep. So put that glove somewhere. You won't be needing it. And sure enough, man, I hit 10th and I freaking bunted. Every time I came up, I bunted. And when somebody else would get on base, I would time pinch run and they knew I was stealing. But that's the only time I went to Instructs, and it was so like specialized, man. It was kind of different.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Yeah. I remember I went to Instructs twice. I went the first year, same type thing. Hey, they make it sound like it's a great thing. Like, hey, congratulations, you made it. Yeah. I don't know why they do that. Maybe because it's optional and players will be like, heck no, I'm going home, you know, the young guys. But it's always the young guys that go to Instructs. And so you know, I was like, all right, cool. And then I was like, man, I got to fly home, and then I got to fly back, and I got to stay here for a month. And, yeah. and you're not getting paid? You don't get paid, right?
No.
You don't get paid for instruct. Oh, no, we got $20, I think. $20 a day.
Yeah, you have money.
So you got $20 a day, and you would eat breakfast at the hotel, which was just like a waffle maker, you know, and cereal, stuff like that. It wasn't anything special. No. And then did they have spread at the
We had like peanut butter and jelly out, and we had like old bagels that would sit in this little Tupperware thing.
Yeah, it wasn't the good spread. Like, it wasn't the good spring training spread.
No.
In spring training, at least with the Padres and the Mets, we had pretty decent spread in spring training. Because ours, well, not the Mets. The Mets big leaguers didn't share a locker room with us. But Padres, they shared a locker room with us, the big leaguers. Wow. So, like, they used the same cafeteria and everything. So, we had, like, nice, good stuff, you know, up in there.
Yeah, we had food catered in. It was normally pretty good. There were some things you needed to stay away from, but it was normally pretty good. But, yeah, you didn't have that in Instructs. And the one thing I learned about Instructs, the guys we would bring are, like, the guy on my team that couldn't find the strike zone. Like, he's throwing balls behind the hitter, you know, off the backstop, but he throws 97. Those are the guys they brought to Instructs. And they're like, yeah, stand in there and bunt. What? I saw this guy throwing over the backstop this season. And I'm trying to bunt this thing?
Hit the ball.
Yeah. That's the one thing I noticed about our guys that we brought.
So after my first year at Instructs, then the next year at the end of the season, the pitching rover was up there. And I was just being like a brown noser. In fact, if you don't know, fun fact, I won the most popular award in high school. I was voted most popular. But also I was voted, and this is what I'm most proud of, I was voted teacher's pet. I was a serious, serious brown noser. And I was the same way in baseball too, you know. And I remember going up to the pitching rover like, hey, Rove, we got Instructs coming up, right? I'm on the list, right, man? And I really had no intentions of going to Instructs. I just wanted to show him, like, hey, I'm ready to do whatever you need. And he was like, oh, you want to go? And I was like, yeah. I mean, like, if you need me to go, I'm down for whatever. And he was like, all right, I'll get you a plane ticket. And I was like, all right. He called my bluff, and I ended up going to Instructs for the second year, man. Oh, and, yeah, it was rough. So
that's definitely a one and done, bro. That's a one and done experience for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about USSSA. For those of you who don't know who's watching, we have 15 people watching on YouTube, I think, right now live. I'm new to this whole thing. I'm going to try. I got a mic coming, so hopefully the audio quality will be better. But I can hear Nick well. Hopefully you guys can hear me well. But I know Nick from – actually, we met. We didn't meet from USSSA. We met through my friend Gus, who is my business manager. And what Gus did for me – and Gus is going to come on the podcast or whatever you want to call this in a couple of days. But he found you. He was looking for companies – for me to work with for my YouTube channel. And he was negotiating deals with various companies. And he was awesome because he knows how like business works. And I have no idea. I just know about baseball and, you know, throwing videos up on YouTube, and it just happened to turn into a business, but he's actually like a business guy. So he like knew how to like talk to these companies and make deals and stuff like that. Anyway, he calls me up one day. He's like, hey, there's this dude out in Tampa who's got this box. You know, he fills it with really cool baseball stuff and he ships it out and it's like a subscription. And he's like, he's legit. He played pro ball. He seems like knows what he's talking about. He's really got his stuff together. And he was like, you should invite him over to come do some videos and then you could promote his box. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like whatever Gus said, I'm 100% in on, cause he's way smarter than I am. Okay. So he probably contacted you the first time.
Yeah.
And you ended up coming down.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first time, man. I showed up and you both were there. I think that first time.
Yeah.
I had never done a video or anything, but y'all were freaking awesome, man. You know, it made me feel comfortable and everything. And now shoot, I love both y'all, you know? So it was a great thing.
That was fun. Yeah. So that was the first time. And we shot a bunch of videos that time. And then back then it was back then you were calling it something else, the batter's box, and now and then it moved to the baseball box. So some, even some of those old videos you'll see, but with a different name on it. But now Nick has done so many videos since then, over a million views. I don't know if you guys can see that plaque back there, that little green plaque right there, but that's over a million views on the Hugo Pro Baseball channel. And I mean, now you're like a celebrity out there signing autographs. I sign more autographs now than I ever did in pro baseball from this YouTube channel.
Isn't it crazy, man? That's so a crazy. Good point. They always had those books of cards, and I always had some studs on my team. And they're like, hey, can you sign? I'm like, me? Yeah. And I'm like speed walking, like, oh, man, I can't wait to sign a card. No. The guy behind you. Oh, hey. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll go to the diagonal.
Or they'll go, hey, can you sign? And you walk over there, and they go, what's your name?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like, there you go. You don't want my autograph. You just want to see if you have cards of me to get my autograph. So in case anything happens, you can sell them later. That's what it is.
Exactly.
But man, the kids are cool. And to get to the point I was originally trying to get to was that's how we met. And then I was already working with USSSA, the All-American program. And then we were looking for another scout. And so I reached out to you, and you were like, heck yeah. And then that was it. That was the end of the story. And this is what – how many years have you done it now?
This is a third year. This was a third year. Yeah, wow. Man.
It's crazy. Yeah, it has been. It's been fun. And it's crazy that you were an All-American, and I was an All-American, and now we're running an All-American program. And what we do, if anyone's watching that doesn't know about the USSSA All-American program, is – we have 24 events across the country, and we evaluate 8 to 14-year-old players. And then the players who we identify as legit players are named All-Americans. And if they accept, they come down to Viera, Florida, and they play in a big tournament. And it's really cool experience. We see a lot of great players. I do the 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. Nick does the 11 and 12-year-olds. And then we got another guy, Ben, this year, who was doing the 13 and 14-year-olds. And then a lot of you guys who come through the program know Tony Harper, who runs the program. Yeah, it's been cool. Unfortunately, this year, we had to shut it down halfway through, or not even halfway through. We were actually – a crazy story. Nick and I and Tony and Ben were on a plane going to – where were we going? Arizona, right?
Arizona, yeah.
And on the flight, we're getting all these messages on our phone like MLB shutting down, NBA shutting down, and we're heading somewhere. We're going somewhere. We had two showcases. So we were about to be on the road for like 5 days or something, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And all this crazy stuff about the coronavirus is going on. And so we get out to Arizona. Luckily, we got to run that Arizona showcase, which was awesome. A lot of great players out there. But then we didn't get to go. I think the next one we had to go to was New Mexico. And we had to find a flight back as fast as we could so that we didn't get stuck out there. Because they were talking about, at the time, shutting down the flights. So we were all freaking out and stuff. But we made it home. What has been your favorite part about doing the USSSA All-American program? So
I got two. We were in Kansas City. I think it was last year. We're in Kansas City, and pitching's at the end of our showcase. But we got to pitching, and we were sitting in a dugout, and the bullpen was straight ahead of us there. And this kid gets on the mound, and when he hit, man, oh, my God, the bat speed on this kid was unreal. Wasn't a huge kid. Good-sized kid, but wasn't like a monster. But the bat speed was like, oh, okay. You know, it caught your attention. The exit velocity off the tee got your attention. But he jumped on that mound, bro, and a 12-year-old, he was throwing 77 miles an hour.
Wow.
I'm like, dang. So seeing kids like that, first pitch, bang, it was like 75. I look over to my helper like, look at this guy, you know? The parents are starting to crowd behind the dugout. And sure enough, you know, the catcher's having a tough time catching him first off. But he hits 77. I'm like, wow. So seeing kids like that, especially that kid, is probably one of my favorite parts. And then my first year, I went out to the actual games. After seeing all these kids from all over the country, after grading all these 11 and 12-year-olds, actually seeing them together on these teams at that event was so surreal, man. And it gave me the goosebumps. Seeing these studs all playing on the same team, it's like, this is cool. Like something I wish I could have done when I was a kid. I would have done it in a heartbeat. You know, to play with kids from Miami and play with kids from Atlanta all on the same team, to play against kids from the other regions, that would have been so much fun. And I always envied the guys that got to do the Little League World Series because I never played Little League. And I feel like this program, man, that brings back those memories. Like, I wish I could have played in this, you know, but going to that event was surreal. And it was so cool to go to that.
Yeah, you could just see it on the kids' faces, man. They're just like, you could just tell they're having the time of their life. And, you know, they're there for, you know, a week. Some of them are there longer because typically we have the select 30 butt up against the All-American games and then also the Elite World Series. So in Vieira during the summer, normally it's just packed for like a month. I knew a few kids that were in all three of them. All three programs, they were staying there, down there, hanging out for a month, which is super cool. If you can make that happen, that's really cool. Unfortunately, I heard today that the Select 30 was canceled for this summer, so that stinks. But we're still doing the all. Actually, because we had to cut the All-American season short this year, we're still doing the All-American games in Vieira, but we're going to do it a little bit different. We're going to have tryouts beforehand, and then we're going to break those guys into three different teams per age. So there'll be a select team, an American team, and a national team. So Nick and I'll be out there, Tony, and I believe Ben will be out there, and we'll be evaluating the kids just like we do. But the only difference is now you don't have to try out in your region. You could just sign up to come to Vieira. So I know the spaces are limited though, because we're only doing three teams per age. So you'll have to go sign up on USSSA. I believe it's USSSAAllAmerican.com is the website. You got to go sign up there before your age group is filled up. And then you'll get the opportunity to play in it. So a little bit different this year just because of all the craziness going on, but we're still doing it. Well, at least let me say the plan is that we're still doing it. You know, who knows what can change, but I believe it's you remember the dates, Nick?
I believe it is the 25th of July to August 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know we have to be there on the 25th. So I'm assuming that's when the showcases will start. The tryouts will start.
So. Yeah. So let's talk about the last video we did. Actually, it wasn't the last video we did. It was two videos we did. Two videos ago, the last video we did was about the Valley gloves. You guys see the stack of gloves back here.
Oh yeah.
Which might be a little hint into what Nick might be got going on with the baseball box next month. I don't want to say too much, but there's your hint right there. But let's talk about the video before that, where we were just standing there talking. And one of the things we talked about was competitiveness. And you started talking about ping pong in the locker rooms. Can we talk about that again? I want to elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, man. So we were talking about, I think it one of the most important aspects of being an athlete or being a competitor in baseball, and it's being competitive. But it's hard to practice, man. You know, there's not a lot of times where you get to go 100% competitive in practice, whatever it may be, until game time. And in order to perfect something, I believe you have to do it a lot, over and over and over again, until it builds up in yourself where you can just flip the switch and bam, you're 100% and you're honed. You know what I'm saying? Your skills are honed in on that. And I think that I brought up ping pong because you put all those guys that are all juiced up and they're perfectionists at being competitive, you put them all around a ping pong table, man, and they just go at it. And I was a victim of it too. We all wanted to play. Some were better than others, obviously, but we used to get jacked up, man, playing ping pong to the point where, like I said, the whole clubhouse would gather around the table. We actually played against, I was one of the better ones in our clubhouse in AA, And so was Trace Thompson, who ended up playing with the Dodgers and I believe the White Sox, but he was in Birmingham. So we had a showdown between me and him one series because I guess he was the best in their clubhouse and I was the best in ours. So we had a little showdown, man. It got to that point where it was so competitive on that ping pong table that, I mean, everybody was involved and it was just – it was a crazy time, man. It was crazy.
Were you in New Mexico a couple of years ago when we went on the bike rides?
Yeah, I was there.
And we played ping pong?
I don't know.
We got to play some ping pong because I'm pretty good at ping pong. Okay. I grew up playing ping pong, so we got to get on the paddles, man.
Well, let's go.
Because I'll get hype on the paddles for sure. Okay. I can't slam it. Can you slam it?
I'm pretty good forehand. The backhand, that was always a tough one, but I started to get good at that one too.
You know, it's funny. I'm all backhand. Like even if I have to go like to my forehand side, I'll go like this.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. It's not good, and I can't like kill it. Like anytime I go to kill it, it takes off like this. Okay. It usually hits the guy, so I can't get that like top spin to get over it. And when I try to do like top spin to kill it, I just hit it straight down and it's no good. So I'm always trying to just nickel and dime on the corners, like backhanded. But I'm pretty good at that. I will say I'm pretty damn good at that. So
hey, you can fire him out like that, man. You get a big boy sweating. But if you're working a big boy over there, you start sweating.
Unfortunately, I'm usually the big boy. Okay. I'm usually breathing hard by 7 points. But but yeah, we definitely got to do that. Now, what about when you were in Instructs and you were stealing, like when they had you stealing all the time, what were you like, what was your strategy and what did you learn at Instructs just from stealing bases and bunting? Let's talk more about stealing bases though.
Stealing bases. I just learned how to be aggressive. The thing was, I wasn't aggressive enough. I was quick and I was fast, which to me are two different things. I was quick in my jumps. I could cover the first couple of steps with the best of them, you know, and my speed was pretty good to take me from there all the way to the base. But I learned how to be more aggressive. I was always hesitant in a game, especially if the coach gave me the sign. I almost wanted to lock up, like, oh, I got to go. It started getting in my head, which would tense my body up. So there, I already knew I had to go. Before I even took the field for game one, I knew I had to steal. So it loosened me up a little bit. And then I started picking up on guys' tendencies. If they're 1 second hold, if they're a 2 second hold, I started getting very, very good at that. Even to the point where when guys would come set with their two legs, if they were slightly apart, a lot of times guys would go to the plate or vice versa. You know, these guys had tendencies when they came to pick over, their feet were a little closer. You know, I started picking up on things like that to the point where I remember reading one pitcher towards the end that his right pant leg, if it tightened up, he was going to the plate. Talking about his pants.
Wow.
And there was guy coaches telling me these little things like, hey, watch his right pant leg. And had they told me that at the beginning of Instructs, I would have been like, what are you talking about? But at the end, I had picked up on all these little tendencies that I could see exactly what they were talking about. And sure enough, as soon as his right pant leg straightened out, he was going to the plate. It was insane. So for me, I got a little bit more confident. I got much more aggressive and I got better at honing in on tendencies of guys, you know, and picking those out and using them to my advantage. The other thing they also kind of piggybacked that was if I missed a ball in the dirt, they would get all over me. So even if I didn't steal that pitch, if I missed a ball in the dirt and didn't go, they would hammer me. So I got good at that as well. In college, I was taught read the catcher's knees. So if the catcher's knees went to the ground, he was going to block a ball. In pro ball, they didn't talk about the knees at all. It was strictly ball flight. I was just reading ball flight. And if, like I said, if I missed a ball in the dirt, they would hammer me. So I got very good at that.
You would be stealing before the ball hit the dirt then.
Yes. To the point where sometimes they would give me a stolen base in the book. When I didn't steal, I was just reading a ball in the dirt, reading ball flight. Before it even bounced, I was gone.
Wow.
And a story about that is we came into spring training. It was probably the next season. And the big league manager came over. And I believe I think all the managers there, but the big league manager was giving a speech, and he was talking about base running and how important it was, and talking about the little things. He wasn't talking about lifting the ball. He wasn't talking about launch angle. None of that stuff was being talked about, but he was talking about base running, and he's talking about specific guys in the organization that he knew that have played for him and whatnot in spring training and all this. And he's like, guess who the best base runner in this whole room was? And this is with all the big leaguers, all the minor leaguers, and the whole system. So you're talking about almost 200 guys. And guys are raising their hand, naming guys. Coaches are naming guys. Nope. All the way down the line, nobody got it. He said, you know who's the best base runner? He said, Martin Maldonado, who's a big leaguer, but he is not the fastest guy. He's a catcher. I don't want to say he's out of shape, but he's a hefty guy. Not the fastest guy. I mean, in a foot race, you probably beat him running backwards, to be completely honest, all right? But this guy was the best at reading the ball in the dirt, and that's exactly what he said. He said he's the best base runner because I see him leaving to go take second base before the ball is even thinking about bouncing. He's like, he is the best at reading balls in the dirt there is in the entire system here, which makes him the best base runner. I was like, wow, okay. So it really pounded at home, you know, that aspect of base running. You know,
that's so cool. I remember we had an older coach that was there, like a rover, and I remember him talking to the base runners. But I kept this. I remember this as a pitcher because I found myself doing this, and it was something that I eliminated as a pitcher. But I thought it was awesome what he was saying. He was saying that for right-handed pitchers, if the base runner's at first base, when we look, we typically have a slight movement in our chin to look down. And then if we're going to pitch, we have a slight movement to look up the plate. It's very small, and we don't know that we're doing it, but just looking at that slight look, once that base runner sees us look up, we're about to start pitching home. And I was like, oh my God. When I heard that, I was like, I don't do that. And then I went home and I did exactly what I was just doing. And I was looking in the mirror. I was like, oh my God, I wonder how many stolen bases I had off of me because of that little move that I had no clue that I was even doing as a pitcher.
Right. And that's funny you say that. That's another tendency that I was working with because guys, pitchers, for whatever reason, they would tilt their hat down. I read hat. They would tilt their hat down when they were looking at you. For me, I don't know if they could see me or not, but this was their way of kind of looking at me. They would pick off from right there too. Their hat would stay down when they picked.
Right.
But as soon as they lifted their hat, I was going. Whether they lifted their left leg or not, I was going because they were going to the plate. And it was mind-blowing when they told me this because I didn't know it. They're like, hey, watch his hat. As soon as it lifts up, go. I'm like, what? Did it one time, and I'm like, holy cow. Okay.
So it's such a little thing, so tiny. Like, and it's not a lot of movement. You saw how we were doing it here, there. But if you look, and that's a great point that you said. I was, when I overheard it, he was talking about the chin. But, yeah, looking at the hat makes it even easier because that's just a bigger thing to look at, you know. Yeah. That's awesome.
It was that off a righty. And then the lefty, I think I talked about it in one of your videos. With a lefty, the left toe, when they go to pick off, all of them do it. The left toe lifts up when they go to pick off the first.
Oh.
And they told me that one time. I'm like, no way. And sure enough, I was watching it every time because they shift their weight to the back a little bit to stay straight up, and their left toe comes up when they pick off the first. When they go to the plate, they load the ball of the foot there and drive home. And to this day, I teach my base runners that because lefties can't help it. They can't help but to lift that toe.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's cool. So when would you – well, I guess if the toe lift off, you would just stay a little closer. But if it's not, then you're ready to do whatever you're doing.
Yeah, and I use it a lot on hit and runs too. So
that's so cool. Talk about D-Day.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what that's about.
Every Tuesday in spring training, I got a little bit pumped for it. A lot of guys didn't, especially if they're an offensive guy, you know, power guy, didn't play much defense. They weren't too pumped, but as an infielder who loved infield, I loved it. We had D-Day every Tuesday during spring training, and we would not hit at all. You know, if we had a game later that day, obviously we would hit in the game, whatever. But our practice that day when we showed up starting at 7 in the morning was defensive, and it was like in Olympics. So we had a quad, four fields, and we'd have a different event going on each field. It was a competition. So you got guys from all different levels shortstops, that was where I was at, We would be at short, and on one field, it was king of the infield. So you'd have the best fungo hitter in the whole organization, whatever coach that may be, smoking balls at you, making a move however they can, and it's crazy what these guys can do with a fungo. So they're smoking balls. If you missed it, you would sit out. But this game would go on for, I mean, a long time with some of these guys that could really pick it. I mean, it would get competitive, man. I know I bring that word up again. It would get so competitive. You're out there sweating, talking trash to each other, like, to the point where next D-Day, you're like, I got you next D-Day, king of the infield, me and you, you know?
Yeah.
After you left that field, you would go to another field, and over there, they had targets set up. So we were shortstops again. We'd field ground balls, and we'd try to throw it through a target, a big circle at first base. And if you made it in the big target, it was like worth a point, and then there was a little square inside. If you made it in that, it was worth 5. And you kept track of that, you know? And it was another thing that you could mark down as you won that. Then one field I remember, it was a pop-up challenge. So we had everybody from the whole, all the fields. At the end, we would do this. From all the fields, they would come onto one field. So this is a lot of guys in camp. I'm probably 140, 150 guys. And then we would all divide up by position. So you'd have catchers, you'd have pitchers, outfielders, infielders. And I think that was it. And you would start with a machine shooting fly balls at home plate. And one guy from your position would be on the mound. So you have to have one foot in the clay. So it would start with one infielder. And infielders would go without the rest of the positions. One infielder on the mound. Shoot a fly ball. If you caught it, another infielder would run out. One foot on the clay. They would shoot two balls. If you have two catches from your infielders, a third infielder would go out. So you would get to the point where there's like 11, 12 guys out there with one foot on the mound. They're shooting 12 balls like rapid fire out of a machine, and you're having to try to catch the fly ball without running into each other, mixing up balls.
Oh my God.
That was probably the funniest thing ever, man. Because position coaches would even get pumped up. Like the catching guy did not want to lose. He's like, catchers, come on. We've been working for this. Charlie Green, he's still the Rover there. For the whole minor league system. He'd get pumped up, bro. Catcher, we've been working for this. Let's go. And one time, he's all hyped up one Tuesday for the fly ball competition. He's talking trash the whole day through all the other events. We get over there, and his catcher drops the first one. Oh, he's pissed. He throws his mitt. He heads off back to the clubhouse. Well, he was pissed.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's so funny. We were actually – you told me this story. You told me about D-Day. It was like – I want to say it was your first year when we were working together.
Yeah.
And so it had to be like 3 years ago. And we were actually talking about doing something like that, like hosting an event where, like, we could have not only defense but offense as well, but, like, fun event, fun type of challenges that you could do on the baseball field. Similar to that, not exactly that, but stuff like that. And then possibly doing it, you know, in some different areas in the country and stuff like that. And maybe having competitions, grading the guys, ranking the guys, whatever it is. But that just sounds like so much fun to do, man. That would be a blast. I bet the kids would love it. I mean, obviously you guys loved it when you did it. And,
oh, my God. So much fun. Then you got a little bragging rights, you know, like,
right.
I beat a guy from Venezuela. Oh, I beat a guy from California. You know, it was like, it was big time.
Right.
You know, so I think that would be so cool, man, to have a group of 10-year-olds or a group of 12-year-olds out there doing the same thing. You know, whoever wins gets their name on the leaderboard, trying to beat the rest of the nation. You know, I think they could get really, really heated and then practice that competitiveness, man.
Right. Also, yeah. And it's fun. It's different. Like, sometimes baseball, I feel like, can get, like, super, super serious sometimes. Yeah. You know, again, even at the youth level, like, it gets real serious. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're not having fun on the baseball field, like, you know, you're just burning yourself out. You know, a lot of the times it's maybe not even the kids burning themselves out. Some of the times it's the parents. But, yes, you know, it's got to be fun. And I think that would just be so much fun for everyone.
We gotta
keep talking about that and figure that out. Maybe try to put on an event. Maybe here we'll start in Florida locally, and then maybe see if we can spread it out and do something with it. But that would be super, super cool and super fun. Yeah. What else were we talking about? We were talking about something else the other day.
Let me ask you, man. What do you miss most about playing, whether it be pro ball or college ball? What do you miss most about it? We'll say pro ball. What do you miss most about playing?
The thing I miss most is just like the locker room environment. Like just the, I never laughed so hard. Like you ever laugh so hard that you're just crying, you're in tears and you can't like move. And it's just that camaraderie that you build with certainty. It's not every team. And it's definitely not every player, but there's definitely groups of guys within pro ball, college ball, even high school ball that, man, I just miss that, like that camaraderie. And like, cause you're basically living with these guys. I mean, like you like, even in pro ball, if you're living in an apartment together, you're actually living with them, and then you're going to the field and you're living with those guys in the locker room basically for 8 hours, 9 hours a day. And then it's every single day for, you know, 160 something days. So, you know, that's what I miss the most is like just that camaraderie and the fun, man. It was fun to me. Just having those, everyone busting on each other, making fun of each other, and just all the crazy stuff that there's so much stuff. I remember we had a conversation one time. I can't say on the air what we were talking about, but this debate, I should say, literally went on for about half of the season. Every single day we continued to debate this one subject, and it was ridiculous. The debate mean nothing. Unfortunately, I can't say it again here, but it was just hilarious that people would come up with different points, like no this, no that, no this. And then one of my favorite things was Kangaroo Court.
Oh yes,
bro, I would be dying just laughing at some of the stuff. Did you guys do Kangaroo Court?
We did. It wasn't as serious as I wished it was, but we did it, man. And occasionally we would meet, probably once a month, man. And nobody was off limits. I mean, the coaches are getting fined probably more than the players. That was a lot of fun, bro. And I agree, man, it's the clubhouse. I miss that. I miss that a ton.
Yeah.
What do you miss the least?
Oh, man. I was going to say the travel, you know, like the bus trips, like the 10-hour bus trips. Like I remember going from Oregon to Boise, Idaho, which was like an 11-hour bus trip in the middle of the night. Oh. And, you know, everyone's doubling up. In the bus seat, so it's not like you can spread out. Although there were dudes literally laying in the, so here's a typical bus trip, right? You literally have dudes laying the whole length of the bus. You'll have guys laying in the walkway. So like if you have to go to the bathroom and on a minor league bus, you literally have to climb on the armrests all the way. Like the coaches, if the coach had to go to the bathroom, all the coaches sit in the front seats. So like the first three or four seats was the coaches and the trainer. So like those were in the front of the bus. They had to go pee. They literally, you saw the coaches climbing, stepping on each armrest down the aisle because there's just dudes laying all the way down the whole way. And then you've got dudes laying across the seats, you know, crisscrossing their feet because like another dude's laying this way because there was no empty space in there. And so, you know, it was literally like a jungle gym trying to get to the bathroom.
Oh,
and then some dudes would lay underneath the seats if there was no space. It was just crazy.
And then you wake those guys up and they're like, what's wrong with you, man? Why are you waking me up? Make it the dang way. Oh, my fault. I was trying to climb on top of the bus.
Yeah. Like sometimes they'll have their legs up on the seat and like there's no way to get over them. So you got to like tap them. Hey, you know, and then they're pissed that you woke them up. Man, I just got to sleep, man. Yeah, yeah, that's got to be the thing I hated. I don't miss the most. What about you?
I think it's the bus rides, man. I still remember this bus ride from Appleton to Bowling Green, Kentucky in Lowell. That was like 15 hours, man. And it was miserable. Through the night, after a game, like miserable. And this one sticks out big time. Small crowds on a Thirsty Thursday at an away stadium because you could hear everything those college guys are saying and they were going to rip you. If you're struggling, well, your batting average is coming into play, your mugshot, or not your mugshot, your picture on the big screen's coming into play. Boy, they're ripping you and everybody can hear it. Only on those empty stadiums, man. I had one, I was hitting 118 in May in low A. 118 through a month. Worst start of my whole life by far, and I still remember it was Thirsty Thursday in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and this guy's like, 118? Shaw, are you kidding me? You're not even hitting your weight. And bro, everybody in the entire stadium could hear it. I heard it standing in the box. I mean, everybody freaking heard it in the whole stadium. And guess what? I didn't get a hit that time.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
Yeah, man.
That's so funny.
Good times, man.
So we got to do the – I remember what we were talking about before, too. We were talking about a camp, possibly doing a camp. So instead of doing, like, a skills challenge, we could also do travel around and possibly do a camp, you know, a fielding camp, hitting camp, pitching camp, whatever it is. Maybe get some other guys, you know, who have been on the channel before and all get together and, you know, maybe a position-specific camp, instructional camp. But that's some things we've been talking about and thinking about, and we'd love to do. We just got to figure everything out. So if anyone's watching that's interested in any of that stuff, let us know in the comments so we can get some feedback. We're literally, again, we started talking about this 3 years ago, but, you know, haven't really done much with it, except talk more about it. So, but give us some feedback. Like if that's something that you sounds cool to you and you would sign up for, let us know, because, you know, it's something possibly that we can make into a reality when everything clears up here, you know, with all this craziness. But Nick, I appreciate you coming on as always. The first episode, I don't know what I wrote in the description, based behind the scenes was what I was going to call it. I already had a podcast. Gus wanted me to start a podcast a while ago, so we did a couple episodes called Behind the Scenes, but I'm saying this is episode number one of Behind the Scenes. This is the first one, and there's nobody better than the Nick Shaw to have on for episode one. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you talking. For anyone that wants to know more about Nick and what he does and the Baseball Box, you can go to thebaseballbox.com. Check him out there. And, of course, you can see him on YouTube on Hugo Pro Baseball. Check him out there. Of course, if you've got any questions, let us know. Thank you so much again, man. I appreciate it. Hopefully I get to see you in person soon, sooner than later. I hopefully don't have to wait till July 25th, man.
I hope so too, man. I'm honored to be here, man. Thanks for having me, man. And guys, let us know about the skills competition, man. Let us know. All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Let me try to stop this. I'm new. I don't know what I'm doing. Hold on 1 second. Stop the live stream. Boom. Stop recording. See you guys.